Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name is Ralph, and I'm an alcoholic. See, I'm liable to say everything that go through my head, and that ain't always good, because I'm like, he want me to do something pornographic with this microphone. I'm not that kind of guy. You know, he's sitting up here while you playing. Before we get into proceedings, where's Nicole? Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday. And I want to thank my brother for starting this thing off. And before we get in it, because somebody's probably like me, and it would be nice to think everybody goes to a meeting is really attentive, but if you're sitting out there, you like me, and you see this lipstick, I probably couldn't take my eye off of that. Wait a minute. I'm distracted by it. And I know you. I know you, see. Orinda did it, you know, so. And if it's too distracting, somebody just kind of wave and say, dude, I can't hear you, and I'm going to take it off. But I want to welcome our new friends to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank the group for asking me. Got a good friend here who asked me to come out, Laurie. I want to thank you for the invitation. My brother-in-law is here, Mike Gallagher, and people might look at him and say, how's he? And he really is. I'm not just saying that like, I'm not saying it like, they AA brother. No, he's family, you know. So, you know, this is us. Talk to me after the meeting if you want to. And now somebody's saying, dude, it's just up here. Hell, he's being a clown. You know what? I like being out here with you guys. I like being out on a Saturday night with something green in my pocket, and I'm in an upright position. This is the only place I can come to where you appreciate the significance of that statement. I don't say it lightly. I'm a guy that come from money loaded. Money loaded. New friends, when you talk about this first step of recovery, if you come from that place, Bill Wilson described it. He said, alcohol was my master. I understand that. I understand when it told me what to, I'm in a motel on 74th and Western. I work in Alhambra, which is an hour away, and I'm in the motel, and it's about 2:30 in the morning. Okay, I'm going to go to work in the morning. It gets to be about 4 o'clock because time, when you got something, it be moving fast. When you don't have nothing, it's crawling. You know, but I'm in the motel, and now it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Okay, I'm getting ready. I'm going to have to get up and get out of here at about 7:30, 8 o'clock. Now, all of a sudden, it's 7 o'clock. Now, I'm rehearsing what I'm going to say when I call because it don't matter that Ralph say he got to be at work. Alcohol was my master. Was my master. And so in October of 1986, you know how we've had some big disasters lately, you know, and sometimes, you know, we'll have them, and you can see it coming. Sandy, I think, was the last one, and people could predict it, could see it coming to the Floridas, and meteorologists could see it, and they could talk about it, and they could warn you about it, but they couldn't stop it. Somewhat the way my life was going back in October 86, and the waves were crashing, and they were crashing, and they were crashing, and they were crashing, and they were eroding Ralph White, no more me. And something happened on October 11, 1986, and the waves stopped right there. I didn't cause it, I didn't produce it, I didn't direct it, I can't predict it. For all of us, we had a wave-stopping moment. Most of us in Alcoholics Anonymous, we call that grace. We call that grace. And to our new friends who are coming in here with your own wave stop moment and wondering, what do I have to do to stay walking up under that umbrella of grace. That's what it is we do in here. We're a storytelling society. You know, when you get in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of times for those of us, and I know it's some thumpers in here, and it gets popular to say, I don't want to share a long drunkalogue. I just want to share about recovery. But I lose the power of what it is that we're doing. If you go to enough meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, new friends, you'll get a lot of information. That's what we do at our meetings. There's a lot of information disseminated. You'll find out a lot about the disease that I suffer from. But the information, don't get trapped in them. The information is cool. But the power in these rooms is the transformation. Listen for the information, but look for the transformation, the transformational stories that take place in these rooms. And I see the transformation best in our ladies. You know, I'll see somebody sitting in the room right now, and then a young lady that came up here and took the cake. I'm like, what's she doing in here with us? She's such a sweetheart. She's a sweet little girl. You know, you come in here, you look like soccer moms, and you look like housewives. You know, we'd be like, what you doing up in here with us? Then you get to this podium and start sharing. We'd be like, ooh, please, don't you leave us, you know. And the power of the power. The transformational power. You know, fellas, and I know I'm not the only one, you be in a meeting, and you be in a meeting early on, and you sit up here in our rooms, because the ladies, you bloom and you blossom and you become all that you were meant to be. And you sit up in here, and I could remember being new. I don't do it as much now because I'm no. And I used to say, damn, where was she at when I was out there? And one of my partners would say, she was out there too. She wasn't looking like that either, you know. So. While you're playing. You know, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I'm one of six boys. We stayed in a little two-bedroom apartment, moms and pops in one room, six boys in three bunk beds in the other room. Earliest memory of my old man, alcoholic, don't want to be like him. My brother gave you a quick snapshot of that. It's interesting, you know, I got five brothers, four of us in the program. My brother Ron goes out, and Ronnie talks a lot, too. And when Ronnie shares his story, very interesting, because we come out of the same environment, come out of the same household, slept in the same bed, literally, his feet to my head and vice versa. And when Ronnie shares his story, he always shares about being somewhere else, doing something else, wanting to be somewhere else, being somebody else, doing something else. I, on the other hand, could not imagine being anybody other than me. I couldn't imagine being anybody other than a young brother growing up in Watts in the 60s. It was a changing time. It was a turbulent time. And I was going to do something, and I was going to make something out of my life, and I was going to be an asset to my community. So I'm not here to report to you guys. And the reason I share that, you know, people talk about everybody knows how to drink. That's why we don't share a drunkalogue. That ain't true. We a group of unsuccessful drinkers, so this ain't everybody know how to drink. That ain't why we share our stories, number one. And number two, there are as many different portraits of the alcoholic as there are alcoholics. And so for some people, you know, so that's why we share our story, because you can't appreciate where I am now if you don't know where I come from. Because I'm not here to share with you tonight that I'm an alcoholic, because my daddy was one. Somebody in here grew up with parents that never took one. I'm not here to share with you tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a product of a broken home. Somebody in here grew up with both parents in the house. I'm not here to share with you tonight that I'm an alcoholic because I'm a poor kid from the ghetto. Look around the room. You know that ain't the reason. I'm not here to share with you tonight that I'm an alcoholic because we didn't have no money. Somebody in here grew up with a silver spoon. I'm here to share with you tonight that I'm an alcoholic for two reasons and two reasons only. One, when I take one, I can't tell you when I'm going to stop. Two, when I sincerely don't want to put it in me and start it up again, I put it in me and start it up again anyway. That's it. That's all. The rest is my story. My story go a little bit like this. Every one of you had me in your classroom. I was usually class president or student body president, straight A student, teacher's pet, played ball, made all stars. Outside, I should have been okay. On the inside, I've always felt like if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. Yeah, I was teacher's pet. Yeah, I was playing ball. Yeah, I was a straight A student. I would have traded it all in if it could have been cool. If I just could have been cool. My brother was telling you a little bit of my story, because me, Ronnie, and Reggie, we were the nerds in our neighborhood, you know, going to the library and the rest. Because the cats who were cool, I see some of you sitting in the room right now. You were the ones in the bathroom shooting dice, smoking cigarettes, taking quarters from guys like me that brought extra quarters with them. And you knew how to talk to girls, and girls were a mystery to me. Fellas, I don't know why it was. You guys, 13 years old, you guys would be talking about throwing down with girls already. I didn't know you were lying, but I'd be thinking to myself, how come I don't know, you know? Took me a while to get comfortable telling my story in Alcoholics Anonymous, because this is the first place I ever landed where folk try to out-bottom each other, right? And And I wanted a penitentiary story without going to the pen to get one. But my story's my story, and I'm not willing to go get another one. I'm a shy guy. I'm a square, and I'm 16 years old. I'm scared of girls. I ain't touch nothing. Now, I get a girlfriend at 16. Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 don't mean the same thing it means for some of you cats. Ralph with a girlfriend at 16 simply means this. Ran with a crew of dudes, went with the same group of girls. One of my boys broke up with this girl, waited a little time to pass, told my other boy I want to go with her. He came back and told me. She said, yeah, now I got a girlfriend. But I don't know what to do. You know, I had other girlfriends before, but this one actually knew she was my girlfriend, right? Don't know what to do with girls, but on this particular night, I'm out on a double date. You know, me and my girl in the back seat, older partner of mine, him and his girl in the front seat, he driving. Plastic cup of rum and coke come to the back seat this particular night, drank it down real warm, rushed back to the top of my brain. All of a sudden, Ralph's hand started doing things they had never done. Mouth started saying things it had never said. I'd arrived. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Gave me the courage to do and to be and to say things I wouldn't do, be and say without it. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. The big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, talks about me in lots of places. New friends, we have a chapter in the front of our book called The Doctor's Opinion. And there's a line in The Doctor's Opinion that jumped out at me first time I read it. Men and women like me drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. I recognize that. You know, I hear a lot of you guys' stories. And for many of you, when you get up here and share, you say that first drink was magical. It was mystical. It was transcendent. I made a commitment. I'm drinking for the rest of my life. It wasn't like that for me. You know, it crept up on me. I did the normal progression. And I understand this disease being progressive in nature, because that first night I drank, I didn't get pissy drunk. I didn't throw up all over myself. I didn't make a fool out of myself. I got a warm, tipsy feeling. I kissed and licked and sucked on my girl in some places I had never done before, you know, and that's how my drinking stayed. I would drink to go out on the weekends and party. Graduated from high school in 71, graduated to higher education in every sense of the word. 71, I'm drinking to go to parties on the weekend. By the end of 71, I'm drinking not only the night of the weekend, but I'm drinking during the day to get ready for the party that night. By 72, I'm drinking not only on the weekends, but I'm drinking during the week after class now, and I've added some non-addictive marijuana to the mix. By the end of 72, I'm drinking and I'm smoking herb and I'm selling herb. By 1973, I'm drinking, I'm smoking herb, I'm selling herb, I'm doing other drugs, I'm doing it on a daily basis, and you could not have told me it was anything wrong with the way I was living. Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about at a certain point in my drinking career, I won't be able to tell the truth from the false, and the way that that worked for me is this. Isn't the way that I'm doing it, isn't that the way everybody does it? Why would you be young, with a bright future, with a little bit of money, didn't chase some women and getting low to come with the territory? In those days, man, if you came over to my house and I couldn't offer you something to drink or something to smoke, I wasn't being a good host. And if I went over your house and you didn't do the same for me, not only weren't you being a good host, wasn't coming over your house no more. For what? We don't have nothing to talk about. You know what? In 2009, you know, now we in 2019. I got to get used to saying that. In 2019, we got to, you know, you got to practice safe sex. You got to, you know, you got deadly sexually transmitted disease. You know, but back when I was coming up in the late 60s and the early 70s, it was a turbulent time and a changing time in this country. But in some ways, it seemed like a simpler time. Back in those days, man, I'd go to a club. I'd have a one-question interview for a girl. You get high? If not, next. I don't want to know your last name. I don't need to know your sign. I don't need to know who your mom is. You know. Let's get to the basis of this relationship. Are you getting loaded like I'm getting loaded? That's just the way that it was. You know, I came around this program. You heard my brother talk about used newcomers. And I came around this program four times before I came to stay. And I learned some things about Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are some thin lines in Alcoholics Anonymous and new friends. One of the thinnest lines that makes most of the difference, there's a thin line between comparing and identifying. In my early efforts at doing this deal, I would always compare and I'd never identify. And I couldn't find myself in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't find myself in any of you guys' stories. I would read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. I read Bill's story. First thing I say when I read Bill's story, Bill is old, the white guy. We ain't got that in common. You know, Bill is a veteran of foreign wars, Vietnam era draft dodger. Bill was a Wall Street stockbroker. Check out the way I handle money. You know, Bill in his story, if you read it, he said there had been no real infidelity. Miss me on that one, too. You know, so I would always find all the differences. And when I would listen to you guys, when I would listen to you guys share your stories, I'd do the same thing. When I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay, Somebody taught me how to read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, Ralph, the same way that you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous is the same way you listen to our members share at the meetings. When you read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous and when you listen to our members share their experience, strength, and hope, ask yourself three or four questions. Ask yourself, did I drink like he drank? Did I think like he thought? Did I feel like he felt? Or did I do what he did? And when I read Bill's story in the light of those questions, I found my story. And Bill's story, just like Bill, he said, the drive for success was on. I'm at this major university, and just like Bill, the drive for success was on. I proved to the world I was important. Just like him, drink started taking a more important and exhilarating part in my life. He said something strange in his story. Bill said, out of this alloy of drink and speculation, out of this combination of his thinking and his drinking, he would later forge a weapon that would turn on him like a boomerang and all but cut him to ribbons. I don't talk like that, you know. Folk where I come from had a shortcut version. They used to say, trouble always starts out like fun. And you couldn't have told me when I'm up in the dorms drinking that Annie Green Springs, drinking that Tyrolia, drinking that Spinata, drinking that Boone's Farm, drinking that Southern Comfort, drinking that Jim's. You couldn't have told me when I'm drinking that Brass Monkey, drinking what them youngsters drink. You couldn't have told me alcohol was going to have its way with me, but it did what it is that it does. And I stumbled up out of that school, and I started working as a counselor for L.A. City Schools. And although I had the kind of job that should have allowed me to acquire what normal people did, I never did that snapshot of Ralph's life. This is when alcohol was working. I used to buy a car and make exactly 3 car payments, then come find her. Come find her. First time I had a car repossessed, I had the nerve to call LAPD. I'm 9 months behind on the note, right? Next 2 times, I didn't even trip. I already knew. I'm the kind of brother never had a problem balancing a bank book. Payday, I got money. 2 days later, broke. 0. No problem balancing my bank book. Stayed in the crib from 1976 to 1979 without paying rent. A couple of baffling features about the disease I suffer from, one of them is this. I can't see my relationship with alcohol until I'm free of it. I can't see what it's doing to me when I'm in the mix. So some of the things that are crystal clear to me now, looking back in the rearview mirror of experience, were not at all clear to me when I was going through them. One fact stands out real clear to me about the days I thought alcohol was working. I used to go to work for 2 weeks to live for 2 days. That's it. That's all. Can't tell you the day or the time or the hour. Can't tell you where I was or what I was doing when alcohol ceased to be a luxury for me and became a necessity. I can tell you that it did happen. You know what I don't like about the invisible line? It's invisible. It ain't nothing to say. If you take this next one, you enter in the region from which there's no return through human. Matter of fact, by the time you realize it's a line, you way over. Right. Well, put that line back there. You know, cold thing about the disease I suffer from, by the time I realize I have a problem and need to do something about it, it's already too late for me to do something about it. Cold thing. Anybody else in here play the regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous? Saw some hands, saw some nods. The regret game in Alcoholics Anonymous goes something like this. If I only knew then what I know now, yeah, right. You know, remind me of a story I like to tell about a little boy named Johnny. Johnny had a habit his father frowned on. Johnny used to like to play with himself. Father goes to work one day, comes home early. Little Johnny's bedroom door is closed. Father opens the door without knocking. Sure enough, little Johnny's in the bedroom masturbating. Father says, son, I thought I told you if you keep doing that, you'll go blind. Little Johnny stopped and looked at his dad and said, well, daddy, can I just do it till I need glasses? You know, and I like that story because that story reminds me of me and the life. I see you going down, you going down, you going down. I'm just going to do it till I need glasses. Book talks about seeking the Lord companion. It wasn't long before I became the Lord companion. We ain't got enough time. Got married on a Saturday afternoon in April in 1980. Had a bachelor party the night before my wedding. None of the guys at the bachelor party are getting married the next day. They all got sense enough to go home 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm still at my bachelor, 7:30 in the morning, me and my brothers. Take me home at 7:30, put me in bed, you know, get me up at 10 o'clock for my 1 o'clock wedding. I'm tore up. You know, I'm supposed to say my own vows at this wedding, right? They get me there, and apparently when I show up, the stagger is so severe that my then wife-to-be took one look at me stumbling. She looked at the preacher. She said, okay, scratch the own vow. Say the regular on him, right? So now my lines are cut to two words. We get into the ceremony, get ready, say, I threw up all over. Passed out. Have not taken a wedding picture to this day. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. New friends, if you're anything like me, when I first hit the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, although the words you guys use in the room are not unfamiliar to me, the way you guys use them is not the way I use them in my everyday walk around vocabulary. You guys were talking about this psychic change and this phenomenon of craving, this allergy of the body, and the way you guys use all those terms I needed help with. But the first time I heard pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, didn't need no help with that one. Folk like us don't need a dictionary for pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I lived pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization up close and personal, and I lived it over and over and over again. See, I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband, remember sitting on my living room couch, wife coming out the bathroom real fast, pulling her pants up, go to the dining room table, pick her purse up off the table, clutch it real close as she went back to the bathroom. I feel this tall because nobody was in the house but me and her, but it got like that in my house. I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband, remember coming home, sticking my key in the door. Wife and two-year-old daughter sitting here, they both crying. I look over here and homeboy sitting in my seat, he's got a gun pointed at my stomach talking about I want my money right now. Fellas, let me holler at you guys for just a minute. Don't know about the rest of you, but I always had a lot of fears and a lot of doubts about, do I have what it takes to be a father? Do I have what it takes to be a husband? Because if you're in the life, your track record already gives you your answer, right? Because what's the father's role and what's the husband's role? To protect and to provide, and it's a cold-blooded feeling, fellas. Laying in bed with a woman night after night after night after night. Knowing not only aren't you protecting, knowing not only aren't you providing, you're the one bringing the wolf to the door. See, I'm the kind of father and I'm the kind of husband, remember sitting on my back porch. Two-year-old daughter coming outside pulling in my coat. Daddy, daddy, that's my piggy bank. Remember stopping, giving her a little grin. Don't worry, baby. Daddy's going to put some dollar bills in here for this change. And I wasn't raised to be stealing from my daughter. And I wasn't raised to be stealing from my wife. I was an alcoholic with no tools of recovery. And I did what it took to get what I needed to get. Share with you that my disease is progressive in nature. And in my experience, it's progressive in a couple of areas. Share one already. It takes more than it used to take in order for me to get the same effect. But my disease is progressive in another area, my behavior. My behavior gets progressively worse. I'm willing to do more readily, chase this thing. First time I hit my wife's purse, if you would hook me up to a poly, I would have passed when I said, I'm not stealing this $40. I'm going to take this money and I'm going to replace it before she knows it's missing. Meant it with everything in me. Sometime when I think about the ties that hold us together, how thin they are, but how strong they are, how fragile they are, but how lasting they are, it blows me away. You know, they started writing, you know, two drunks got together, 1935, Mother's Day weekend. And they started looking for drunks like me and you. And in 2 years' time, they have found about 40 people staying sober between New York, Cleveland, and Akron. Counted noses. And in 1937, they started writing this book of ours. 1939, they published that book. I made it to this earth sometime after that, and I made it to you guys sometime after that. And the remarkable thing about that whole process still blows me away when I think about it. They put me in that book. They put me in that book. 2 weeks after I said I'm going to replace this money before she knows it's missing, I'm out doing what I do, spend up all my money again. And there's a line in the book describes me to a T. We don't know why, but the alcoholic sometimes will be unable to recall with sufficient force. Pain, suffering, humiliation, weeks, even days ago. The idea of replacing the money didn't come to mind. I have new thought. Last time I took $40, came back looking for some more, and my wife moved the purse. This time I'll take all the money out the purse, and that I don't spend up, I'll sneak it back in the purse. And I was off and running and hitting my wife's purse on a regular. And I did it one too many times, and I came back one morning, and a note was on the screen. The rest of your stuff is at your mama's house. Suitcase on the porch, I'm putting out my house, I'm now my daddy. Went to stay at my mom's house over the course of the next year. My five brothers all got put out their respective homes, and all of us ended up in my mama's, and we damn near killed. When I got put out of my house and went to stay at my mom's house, my ex-wife thought it was something salvageable about this piece of man she married. She would bring my daughter over on Saturday so we could keep a father-daughter relationship. And I wanted to be a father to my little girl with everything in me. I really, really, really did. I wanted to take my girl to Disneyland, and I wanted to take her to Magic Mountain. I wanted to take her to a movie on a Saturday afternoon. I wanted to walk up the street with her little hand and my big hand, take her to the store and buy her some ice cream. I wanted to sit her in my lap and read stories to her. I wanted to tuck her in bed at night and get a good night kiss. I wanted to get the look from my little girl that I've seen men in the fellowship get, the look like this is my daddy and this is my hero. And the best I could do on those Saturdays was 30 minutes. 30 minutes. I tell my mom something like I'm going to the store to buy Rain some ice cream. I disappear. Her mom will come to get her on Sunday night. Still remember some of them long Sunday nights, sticking my head around the side of my mom's house, tears flowing. And I see those two heads in the car and those headlights backing out the driveway. And through the tears, I'd be thinking to myself, there goes my life, backing out this driveway. And I've heard a lot of people share about being scared of dying out there, not my story. Never scared of dying, scared I was going to keep waking up to the same old thing. Monday the same as Tuesday, the same as Sunday, the same as Christmas, over and over and over again. And I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October the 11th, 1986, I got miserable enough. I got tired enough. I got directed to my fourth program of recovery. I went to the Harbor Life Center on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. That October in 1986, I was in a real bad way, and I was in a real bad, dark place. I was full of remorse, and I was full of regret. I was full of I'd never be able to forgive myself for the things I had done and what I had become. I had not looked at myself full face in the mirror in over a year and a half. And the first weekend in the light, they brought a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous into the facility, and they took us to that meeting that night. And a speaker was standing up in front of the group that night, somewhat like I am tonight. And he was sharing about taking from the job, and he was sharing about taking from the family. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, yeah, you sharing about doing scandalous things, but you look scandalous. You should have been doing that. I'm different. Y'all ain't going to hear my business. And the speaker seemed like he knew I was in the room. He read my mail. He dropped something on me like this. He said, if you're sitting in this room right now, you are not responsible for your disease, but you are responsible for your recovery. And you have just now tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself. And you don't have to drink, and you don't have to use, no matter what, provided you are willing to fulfill some conditions. That speaker that night caught my attention. He went on to say, this is the only club you can be a member of where the worse off you are when you get here, better off your chances of staying. And I got the message of hope from the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous they took me to. He described to me what I suffered from, did it in a strange way. Dude was talking about me, talking about himself. I had never seen anything like it. I still never see anything like it. It's what we do. You know, and it seemed like I'm going to share some stuff. When you get Ralph White, I'm not one of them speakers that say, everything I say is coming out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you hear anything from me that's opinion, then sometimes I hear a speaker say, I'm not sharing opinion. I'd be like, that's your opinion you ain't sharing. An opinion. I'm listening to you. That's a pit, you know. So I don't make no bones about it. You get all of me. You get all of my experience. You get all of me. You know, I try to stay. Most of the everything I know about recovery usually comes from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous or from you guys' experiences or from my own experience. I'm going to share something that's out of the big book of Ralph White's experience. You ain't going to find it in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned this the hard way. I learned, you know, from being out there, I learned some anatomical facts about a guy named Ralph. I learned that when my ass is raw, my ears open. And my mouth closes. When my behind starts healing, my mouth starts running and my ears start closing. Thank God I was tenderized well enough, good enough this last time. When I came back, I heard the music. I heard the music. A speaker was standing in front of a group and he said it's something physically different about me and seemed like he invited me to diagnose myself. Ralph, don't take my word for it. Ask yourself, how many times did you say, I'm just going to spend 20? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm going to just stop off over here at happy hour? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm going to stop over here? But Boy John's house for a minute. What happened? Whole paycheck. Ralph, did it happen once? Did it happen twice? Every 2 weeks from 1979 to 1985, if your name is Ralph White, whole paycheck. My experience, not yours, not my sponsors, not the oldest old timer in the room. My experience abundantly confirms for me when I take one of anything, no matter where I have to go, what I have to do, who I have to see, no matter how great the wish or the necessity, my body takes over and I got to have another. Okay, smart guy, if it's just my body, how do you explain stone sober, my car seemed to drive to the LIQ on payday? Second part of this disease, the obsession that somehow, someday, I will be able to control and enjoy this magic potion I discovered. Somebody help me with that. Where am I? Where's this control and enjoy coming from anyway? Check this out. Anytime I was controlling, I wasn't enjoying. Anytime I was enjoying, I damn sure wasn't controlling. I can't be. Why am I stuck on control and enjoy? I can't drink because of my body. I can't not because my mind refuses to accept that fact. I'm powerless. Third part is disease, spiritual malady. 12 and 12 describes it as a soul sickness. And in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, Ralph, if you work on the spiritual, the mental, and the physical are straightened out, that's what we do. Don't get scared. Somebody is thinking like I probably would be thinking in your seat. Damn, speaker almost had me. But I feel what's coming, and you don't understand me. You getting ready to hit me with the G word? I didn't come here for that. You know, you can call it universal intelligence. You can call it good orderly direction. You can call it creative. You can dress it up with all them words, Mr. Speaker. But I know what you're getting ready to hit me with, and I'm not feeling that. Yeah, with your 32 years, the God word just slides out your mouth, but you don't understand me. Check this out. I did not come up in here walking toward the light. I came up in here running from the fire. And if your ass is on fire, this is the place for you to be too. And that's how I came up in here. Did not come up in here for what I stayed up in here for. You know, I'm not the speaker tonight because I'm the one that's going to try to scare you into recovery. You know, that's not my story. You know, I'm not the one, if you go back out there, stick. In fact, what I used to think of as my heyday, people used to see the way I was getting down and be like, damn, Ralph, ain't you scared of overdose? I'd be like, scared of overdose? I'm scared of the deadly underdose. You better put some more up on here. You know, So the message of the whole alcoholic and my variety, the way the book talks about it, and it talks about me, saw me coming, talks about a message that a whole guy like me is a message that's got to have depth and got to have weight. The message tonight speaker brings to you that's got the most depth and the most weight, you're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had given up on life. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old did not know where his little girl was enrolled in school and didn't know where his family was living. You're looking at a guy who at 33 years old had not answered anybody's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock wake-up call to go to work, and so long, I no longer thought I was employable. You're looking at a guy who came from a major university in this country, and my job at the end, taking the trash out for a 21-year-old. I was sleeping in the back of my mother's garage. I was eating lemons off a neighbor's lemon tree for breakfast. And the men and women in this fellowship, met me in that condition, and you loved me and you nursed me back to health. You gave me something. You gave me a solution upon which we all agree. You said something in those days that I did not understand. It's found it real hard to wrap my head around. You used to say, let us love you till you can love yourself. I said, how you gonna do something like that? How you gonna love something like this? I stink. If you turn your back on me, I'm liable to go up in your purse right now. How you gonna love something like this? And that was before I knew what takes place in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was before I knew what happens when the God in you reaches out to the God in me. That was before I knew that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we specialize in loving unlovable people. And you love me and you nurse me back to health. You know, I got all the way in this deal. And I'm dead serious about recovery, but I'm seldom serious in recovery. If you ain't laughing in this program, you ain't taking this program serious enough. You know, I see a couple of people in the room right now, just the way I was on some of my early forays into the room. I'd be the guy that was sitting here and people would be laughing. I'd be like, don't be laughing. Dude, it's serious. Ain't nothing funny up in here. You know, if you ain't laughing in this program, you ain't taking this program serious enough. I'm telling you, dude, when I came up in here, you'd have a different speaker if this thing wasn't fun. If this deal wasn't the easiest off the way, I'm telling you, you'd have a different speaker tonight. Somebody just got through reading the traditions, and we got a third tradition. It's a broad third tradition. It's a broad umbrella. Our third tradition is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and that's a big, wide door that's open. You know, you ain't got to try out. You ain't got to do auditions. In fact, the trials are over. You have already auditioned. You know, the minute you say, I got a desire, the minute you just express it, I'm on the team. Can't nobody put you off the team. I am on the team. And most of us in this room, all of us will probably agree that's a wonderful thing. That's a broad umbrella. on the team. But check this out. Everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the goddamn game. Put me in the game. Now, I'm not knocking. We need fans. We need spectators. We even need haters. We even need commentators on the game to make them think that puts them in the game. But put me in the goddamn game. Mr. Speaker, what the hell are you talking about? What do you mean, put me in the game? Some of the used newcomers that's been doing this, man, get all the way and stop doing the AA hokey pokey. Put your right foot in and take your right foot in. Get in. Get in. You know, I'm the kind of guy, it ain't been hard for me. I'm the kind of guy that what I get into, I get all the way into. Baseball was my, I collected baseball cards. I could tell you when Elgin Baylor averaged a triple double. I could tell you, I subscribed to High Times. I'm a student of my craft. Whatever I get in, I get in. You know, why be in a 12-step program and not get into the 12 steps? I was a year into this deal and I got on my knees with a group of men and women. And I said, God, I offer myself to you. I turn myself in. God, I offer myself to you. I'm 33 years old, and I'm tired of losing. I'm 33 years old, and I'm tired of running my own life. I'm running in the walls. I offer myself to you to do something with me. Do something with me. And I didn't wait to get right to come right now. You ain't got to get right to come right in Alcoholics Anonymous. You come just like that. You still hoeing? Get on your knees. Still tricking? Get on your knees. Still stealing? Get on your knees. Still lying? Get on. I got on my knees just like that. Just like that. Do something with me. I'm at the bait and switch moment in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me. And I should have been saying, relieve me of this alcoholism. Relieve me of this thirst. Relieve me of the desire to drink. But I said this, relieve me of the bondage of self. What part of the game is that? When did that come up? That's the whole deal. That's the whole rest of the deal. That's it. That's the deal. Too much me. I was with a sponsee at breakfast one morning. She was saying, Sponce, I really want to get into my steps because I think it's so much more to me. I said, no, baby, we need so much less of you. Spiritual growth, you know, spiritual math is different. Spiritual math is different. Spiritual math ain't measured in acquisition. Spiritual math is really in subtraction. Whole deal, grow God, shrink Ralph. That's the whole deal. That's what this whole process is about. So this get in the game deal, man. I got off my knees and I turned myself in and I'm out the business of running my life and God has been doing some things with me. See, I'm the kind of guy, I'm just an all-in guy. Fellas, I can't even go to strip clubs because I don't like watching. Put me in the goddamn game. You know, I'm that guy. And as a result of being an all-in guy, as a result of being in the game, me and my brother, man, we were sitting out yesterday and tears just come to my eyes. Ronnie was there. Reggie was there. You know, everybody but Rod. And by 24, my daughter's turning 24 tomorrow. She's never seen her daddy loaded in one day at a time. She never will. She graduated from Boston University, you know, 2 Mays ago. And we went down there, you know, and thank you, John. You know, she would stay with my sister. You know, we went to Boston 15 deep. River graduated, you know, and when she was a sophomore down there, man, you know, she moved into her first house. She moved out of the dorm. She had 2 roommates. I want you to have your own moments, new friend. I want you to know what so many people in this room know. I want you to feel what so many people in this room have felt. Those moments of grace. We used to call them luck and we used to call them, but everybody in here that's been doing this thing for a minute, we know grace and we see it and we call it by name when it comes. And sometimes it just come on you out of unexpected places. And we were moving the kids in, man. I had to go to the bathroom, you know, because I was in the bathroom and I'm crying because it just hit me like a ton of bricks. This is what dads do. They don't go in the piggy bank. They move their little girl into their first crib. When I first taught her how to drive, this is what dads do. That 2-year-old whose piggy bank I was going in, she's a practicing attorney in the state of California. She's 35 years old. 5 years ago, we walked down the aisle, and she was on my arm, and she was shaking on my arm. She said, Dad, this is the happiest day of my life. I'm sad about one thing. I said, what's that, baby? She said, it's the last day I'll ever be rain white, but I'll always be daddy's girl. Put me in the goddamn game. You know, I got 2 biological grandsons, man. My last one was born. He's a month and a week old. He was born December the 15th. When we were over range for Christmas, man, I looked at that little boy and I'm like, oh my God. If I had known the grands were so cool, I'd have had them first. You know what I'm saying? I don't have a scientific way of proving it. I can't prove it the same way you can prove a straight line from A to B. You know, I don't have a way of proving it. I can tell you that back in about 1985, my mom had a nervous breakdown and she damn near died. 4 of her sons came to you. 4 of her sons came to you. And my mom is in 10 days or so, will be celebrating her 89th birthday. Right. Put me in the goddamn game. New friends, we don't come for the ripples, but we stay for the ripples. You really don't know what's going on in this room right now. Most of us don't know. Most of us really don't know. We were tornadoes roaring through the lives of people. Every life that the sufferers touch was affected. Check this out. We don't roar, but we touch lives right now. You think you're the only one that go to a meeting. Every time you go to a meeting, if you look real close, every time I go to meet, somebody else is getting good, is getting well too. Somebody else is getting better too. Somebody else's life is getting positively affected too. When I look around this room right now, I see that this room got way more people than the faces we see right here. If you look real close, just at this guy in the front, you'll see a little boy, 4 years old. You see an 89-year-old woman. She's right here. Ever since I came in the rooms, when I look real close, I see the moms and I see the dads. I see the little boys and the little girls. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some little boy or some little girl getting ready to have mama come back. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some family getting ready to have daddy come home. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some man or some woman getting ready to have a hell of a mate into their life. Every time I go to a meeting, me and you, we're doing it right now. I get to participate in some employer that I don't know and could care less about, getting ready to have a hell of an employee into the workplace. Every time I go to a meeting, who wouldn't want to be part of a fellowship like that? I've always wanted to do something important, and I've always wanted to do something significant. And I can think of nothing more important, and I can think of nothing more significant than being a participating member of the life-saving, life-changing experience that is Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever anybody anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of aid to be there, and for that I'm responsible, and I take it real serious. You'll never hear Ralph White say, "I don't know why I'm sober." I know exactly why I'm sober. I get a blessing so that I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, my gift to God. My name is Ralph. I am an alcoholic.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.